Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to ID the Future podcast. I'm Jay Richards. I'm the Director of Research here at the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. We're broadcasting from Seattle, and on today's show we have Jonathan Witt. Jonathan Witt is a senior fellow here at Discovery Institute. He is also a research fellow and writer in residence at the Acton Institute in Grand Rapids. He's the author, co-author rather, of the new book with William Dembski called Intelligent Design Uncensored with InterVarsity Press. And we're going to talk to him about that today. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here.
Hey, well, it's kind of funny to be interviewing you about this book, of course. Most listeners wouldn't know that in some ways you played a role personally in me getting interested in the whole design debate way back. I think it was probably in 1989. We were still college students, and I didn't really think the Darwin debate had a whole lot to do with anything. And you encouraged me, I remember, to read the Walter Bradley Thaxton Olson book, Mystery of Life's Origin, which is kind of an early ID book. You may not even remember that, but I know that was the first book I read that kind of gave me a sense that the materialistic explanation for the origin of life, was not all sewn up. And in some ways, that was, of course, before there even was an intelligent design movement. But we both
That was very early.
Yeah, it really was.
My brother-in-law, he was a pre-med, and he read it and loaned it to me. And I knew he knew his biology pretty well, so I dug into it and was impressed, and then handed that on to you.
Yeah, I know.
And then, of course, the final irony is that you then were kind of the bridge for me to come to Discovery. So it's almost like there's something providential.
That's right. I came to Discovery actually just out of graduate school. I met Bill Dembski, came out here to Discovery in 1998 originally, and then you worked on a number of things, and of course co-wrote the screenplay for The Privileged Planet and worked with Guillermo and me when we were editing The Privileged Planet, and then you came here full-time to Discovery Institute, and you've since moved on full-time to the Acton Institute, where I also was for 3 years, but continue as a fellow here. And so, of course, you had written a book previous to this with Ben Weicker, which is actually one of my favorite books in all sort of intelligent design literature, quite frankly, a book, A Meaningful World. And we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about your new book, Intelligent Design Uncensored, that just came out that you co-authored with William Dembski. Let me just read this great blurb from Michael Behe. Behe says, "Who says accurate cutting-edge science has to be a bore? Dembski and Witt make the biological nuts and bolts come alive and dance. They show that intelligent design is not only true, it's fun." Well, having read the book over the weekend, and it's a quick read, it's a enjoyable read, and it's satisfying. And so I just want to talk to you a few minutes about it for our listeners, because I highly recommend it, especially to those who have maybe thought ID is an interesting thing, but have not necessarily dipped into the literature and want, frankly, kind of one-stop shopping introduction to the subject. But let me just ask you a few questions about the book itself. I mean, how would you say this book is different from other sort of introductory ID books?
Well, you've kind of hinted at it with some of the things you've said, but if I had to sum it up, I'd say it's shorter and broader, and maybe I would like to think more fun, think of a hobbit. So in some way, it's not breaking a huge new ground. I think there are a few arguments, particularly in the back half, that we try to sharpen in ways that that maybe weren't articulated, at least in the book, in the way we did. But mainly, we're trying to make a book that lowers the barriers to entry for people that might be a little interested in ID, or a parent, say, maybe wanting to inoculate their kid before they go off to college and get indoctrinated into Darwinism. This is a fun, easy book that hits a lot of the main points. It's written by a couple of guys that have, been around the debate for a while. And I wrote a lot of it when I was there in Seattle, and so I also had very ready access to several of the other kind of leading design theorists. So I was able to kind of think about, okay, how do they frame things? How might they nuance it? And then, of course, they're dealing with all the constant attacks we're getting. So we wrote it keenly aware of a lot of the objections that are out there, but then we tried to boil it down, make it short, make it fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't mention, of course, you wrote it with Bill Dembski, who's in some ways the sort of leading theorist of the intelligent design movement. But your background, I mean, you've got a master's degree and a PhD in English. And so writing is really your forte. You know, you're sort of the wordsmith of the ID movement in some ways. So it's a great pairing. And I remember when you guys first started to work on this book, I was excited to see how it turned out. And you said it. I mean, in some ways, it's the sort of lowest barrier to entry. But it's not just that you've sort of simplified the debate. You also made it enjoyable. There's a lot of sort of laugh out loud lines in the book. You know, of course, as a co-author of The Privileged Planet, I was pleased to see that you talked really about a range of evidence of ID, from cosmology and fine-tuning and physics to some of the stuff in biology. And a lot of folks have this impression that ID is really just about a critique of Darwinism or something, but you, of course, sort of give a very brief survey of the range of the evidence. And I mean, is that an important point you wanted to make in this book, that ID is not just about Darwinism?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people will think it's just about evolution, and some people, they don't care. They hate evolution. They're glad to see somebody that's taking it on. But for other people, maybe Darwinism is the last thing they're going to let go of. But they might be a little more open if you talked about the evidence for design in physics and chemistry and the kind of large-scale structures of the universe, the solar system, that might come on board. And so we need to make those arguments available as well. And I think it also speaks to some other concerns that some people have. Maybe we'll talk about that a little later. Some people sometimes imagine that ID theorists picture this very limited and narrow role for the designer, and that's not the case. We try to convey that in the book as well.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely do. What would you say is your main goal for the book? I mean, obviously, we're authors, so other than sell a lot of copies, which I hope we do, and I hope everyone's listening will buy a copy, but what would you say, if there's one thing you could accomplish for this book for readers, what would it be?
Well, it goes back to that lowering the barriers of entry, lowering the making it a kind of a low energy input to get into the design movement. We have a lot of scholars among us, and I'm one of them. And we think, well, you know, if we're really going to do the arguments right, it's got to be a really meaty book. Well, then we'll turn around and write a 1,200 page essay for you know, a magazine or a newspaper. Is there really not an in between where you can really hit all of the major arguments, a lot of the, you know, almost all, perhaps all of the major objections, do it in a precise way, but try to keep it fun, keep the cost of the book down, so that we have a vehicle to give to people that aren't just chomping at the bit to read about ID.
Well, you know, the book's called Intelligent Design Uncensored, and the subtitle is An Easy to Understand Guide to the Controversy. Now, we've talked about the scientific evidence, but the book's really more about not just the scientific evidence of ID, but something else too, right?
Yeah, we spend probably 40% of the book focused on the cultural dynamics of the debate. We spend some time looking at the poisonous effects of Darwinism and philosophical materialism on the culture. We give a lot of specific practical suggestions to people that sit, you know, are thinking, okay, I'm convinced the evidence is powerful. There's a real danger here posed by materialism, by Darwinism, to our culture. How can I get involved? We spend some time giving some specific advice, advice about what to do, advice about what not to do. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that want to do good, but they really haven't done their homework, and they actually do more harm than good. So we spend some time saying, please, don't do this, don't do that. so there's a very practical side to it. But then also, we're, as I suggested a moment ago, we also look at certain cultural arguments,
right.
Aesthetic arguments against the design argument, theological arguments against the design argument, and we try to show why those do not have merit.
Yeah, and I mean, all this stuff, you know, if someone's drunk deeply from the well of ID, they might find these things in a more, you know, treated more extensively someplace else, but you don't find them all in one place like this and in a really nicely delivered form. I frankly really like the fact that you guys advise people. You know, I'm imagining this sort of college student that's thinking about going off to graduate school and thinks he or she wants to do something having to do with intelligent design. You say, look, you know, get your degree, work hard, but be wise as serpents and innocent as doves, and don't feel like, you know, you have to come out swinging right at the beginning. You know, do the hard work, get the degree, do the research, and at some point, maybe after you're tenured, you know, you can talk about these things. That's just really basic, but of course, a lot of folks learn the hard way about
right.
that.
Right. I mean, even the Apostle Paul spent some time in Egypt, a lot of times young people, they just want to, you know, throw themselves on their sword, you know, in the first week of a biology class and marginalize themselves. So
right.
it's a place for patience and prudence, and that's not the same thing as cowardice.
No, it's not. And, you know, you always have opportunity to fall on your sword later. You don't have to do it on the
day. Well, never too late.
Yeah, that's all right. As a philosopher, I feel like we've talked about just the basic things, but I don't want you to get away without me, you know, sort of asking a pedantic question. And we have talked about this stuff a lot, but, you know, a lot of us in the design movement right now, we're upset and trying to deal not just with criticisms from materialists and Darwinists, which we're used to, but from fellow theists, and for you and for me, for fellow Christians, and in particular a few Catholic Thomists who are quite critical of intelligent design and seem, you know, almost contemptuous of it in some cases. And, you know, one of their criticisms is that ID folks, they'll say, often frame the issue incorrectly, or they think we concede far too much to the materialists, that we basically imply that, you know, the universe is out there and then God kind of jumps in every so often and does something, but nature is otherwise left to its own devices. And, you know, let me just quote a sentence from the beginning of the book, which is a very common way of speaking for intelligent design people. But when I read it, I sort of imagined what some of these Thomas critics would say. You ask the question right at the beginning. You say, are the things of nature the product of mindless forces alone, or did creative reason play a role? Now, of course, anybody reading the book or that even heard this interview is going to know that you and Dembski, you know, what your views are there, especially because the two of you aren't just ID proponents, but you're also Christians. So you don't think that most of reality obviously is a result of mindless processes and creative reason just does a little bit here and there. But still, you know, ID folks talk this way a lot. So, I mean, how would you explain what's going on? Why would we frame the issue that way?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, there's a time and place for painting in broad brushstrokes and saying, you know, there's a dividing line in the debate. You know, on the one side you have all of those who say there's no role for an intelligent designer in the natural world, and then on the other side you have all those people who maybe even arguing among themselves about a lot of details. But on the other side you have all these people who say that there is evidence, maybe even scientific evidence, for at least some role for a designer.
Mm-hmm.
That may include somebody that's a deist who sees the designer taking a pretty minimal role at this point, all the way to a Thomist who has this very, very rich, developed sense of God's role. So that could be very helpful in clarifying, you know, there's these two camps and guys on the one side, we need to stop arguing with each other. The danger can be if somebody hears that and they don't have the full context,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes we don't give the full context. Maybe we're in a hurry writing a 700-page op-ed. Maybe we've been talking about this stuff for so long we forget to give context. But it can leave the impression that, you know, that these people, they have a minimal view of how much the designer is involved. They think that God just kind of goes in and tinkers a little bit and that these forces are doing all the work.
Right.
And unfortunately, if you can go deeper into the book, and not real far into the book, you very quickly see that one of the key arguments for design theorists, I think it needs to get more play, is that, well, these forces of nature, they themselves become evidence for design, and there's strong evidence that they're finely tuned, and there's nothing to say, this is, of course, moving into theology, but nothing to say that the forces themselves are not, you know, as Paul talks about when he's talking at the Areopagus, he starts quoting these pagan poets, in him we live and move and have our being. That's the view I take, and that's the view Bill takes. You just have to read your way farther into the work to see that.
Yeah, no, it's funny. You quote Paul in Acts 17, which is, it's perfect. I mean, Paul knew to speak to the Athenians in language that they understood. He didn't lead with the thing that was most specific in his belief. And though, you know, many of us that are in the ID movement are also theists, the last thing we want to do is sort of smuggle all of our theistic assumptions into the initial question. And so, of course, if you believe there's evidence of design somewhere, it doesn't follow you don't think the whole thing is fully designed, especially if you're a theist. But it is important to realize that we're sort of working in different rhetorical contexts, and it's important, you know, to be able to kind of make these clarifying statements. But the general posture of ID is to frame these things as minimally and as modestly as possible. Well, I really enjoy the book, Jonathan, and I highly recommend all those listening to get a copy. We'll provide a link for it at the ID the Future website here with this podcast interview. But the book is called Intelligent Design Uncensored by William Dembski and Jonathan Witt, InterVarsity Press, 2010. Jonathan Witt, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jay.
This is Jay Richards with the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.